Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Time now for the Friday gathering, and I'm joined this week by Dennis Nocton, independent TD for Roscommon Galway, Louise Byrne, political correspondent at the Irish Mirror, Christina Finn, political correspondent at thejournal.ie, and I'm joined from our Limerick studio by Niall Collins, Fianna Fáil TD for Limerick County and Minister of State at the Department of Further and Higher Education. Now, we'll start with the resignation as Minister of State by Damien English. Niall, did he make the right decision to step down once it became known that there were discrepancies in his 2008 planning application?
I think he did. I didn't think that it's the type of issue that he could have weathered any type of storm, and I think he just took the right decision, deal with it as quickly as possible and resign from his position as Minister of State. Mm-hmm. He's paid a high price. It's something which he done a number of years ago, as we know. It wasn't right then and it isn't right now, so there's, I suppose, no getting away from it.
And how does it compare with the Robert Troy situation?
Look, all these situations are different. There's different circumstances. Robert Troy didn't declare some of his properties at a particular point in time. He made an error of omission. So, you know, these things are different, obviously.
Do you think this is more serious?
It is serious. There's no two ways about it. He gave information in a planning application which he, by his own admission, he knew to be wrong and incorrect. A lot of people right around Ireland apply for planning permission. They have to give their details. A lot of people don't then receive planning permission on foot of the details that they furnish. So it's certainly something which will grate with a lot of people.
All right, Louise, you have news, have you?
Yeah, so just in the last little while, Cabinet met incorporeally this morning and they have decided to replace Damien English with Fine Gael's Neil Richmond. Widely expected, I think yesterday was kind of the name that was going around. A lot of people in Fine Gael thought that he was overlooked last month during the junior minister reshuffle. So that's literally just been confirmed in the last 20 or so seconds.
There were other names in the frame. There was a question about whether it would go to a woman, whether it would go to a rural TD. Obviously, those considerations didn't come to pass.
Yeah, and there was a lot of conversations about, well, like, what woman would you give it to? It's Emer Higgins. She's the only woman actually in Fine Gael, remarkably, that doesn't have a ministerial job, the only TD. There was a lot of questions about Alan Dillon. They said that that would be a surprising appointment, but he might have geography on his side. Alan Farrell was the other name being mentioned. He's been
a Joe Carey.
Joe Carey. Both Alan and Joe have been backbench Fine Gael TDs for an awful long time, so they were the kind of names being thrown around, but in the end they decided to give it to Neil Richmond, who was first elected in 2020.
What does the pace of the appointment mean, do you think?
I think the government were quite keen to deal with this quickly, and I think that was evidenced as well by how quickly Damien English came out and tendered his resignation. You know, it was within a couple of hours of that story going live on The Ditch, who did great work on this, it has to be said. So I think the government really wanted to deal with this quickly and for it not to distract from the new term, because it's, you know, Leo Varadkar's first proper day in the Dáil's Taoiseach next Wednesday, and I say he'll be glad to have it dealt with.
If you live in Dublin Rathdown now, you're... Three TDs are ministers, Dennis, Josepha Madigan, Catherine Martin and Neil Richmond. What do you think of that appointment?
I think it'll be a very interesting run into the next general election. I think there could be a lot of paper in the letterboxes in that particular constituency over the next number of months. It is interesting from a geographical point of view that you actually have three ministers, three very senior ministers. In terms of Neil's appointment, is a quite significant appointment in relation to the portfolio that he now holds in the Department of Enterprise. So it will be interesting to see. And I think, you know, if you look at the issue of geography in relation to this, this was an issue that dogged the government at the very start. If you remember, there was no cabinet minister from the west of Ireland. There still isn't a cabinet minister from the west of Ireland. And I suspected myself that either Joe Carey, who is a long-serving TD and is well-respected within the party, or Alan Dillon would have got that appointment because of the need for geographical balance. So I'm surprised to see that particular appointment.
And why do you think Neil Richmond got it then?
Well, look, Neil is a very capable, very able politician, and I think that's the reason he got it. And it is, as I say, a very significant portfolio that he has. But I'd say that Joe Carey will be disappointed today, and rightly so.
Mm-hmm. These calls, Pather Tobin made the call on the News at One yesterday, asking that all TDs now do an audit of their properties. Michael McGrath this morning was asked about this, and he said that politicians, ministers are well aware of their obligations and each individual should make sure that their affairs are fully in order. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, look, we are all aware of our obligation. In fact, only this morning I was getting my own declaration form for last year signed. We have to do this every single January from when you're elected as a TD, and this is very standard practice. The Standards and Public Office Commission come into Leinster House every January. They provide a briefing to TDs, particularly newer TDs, in relation to their declaration. So look, it is something that is standard practice there, and people need to make sure that they go through their declaration and reflect it.
They're not. I mean, we had the Robert Troy situation, then we had a number of other people correcting the record. Now we have this, which may not be in breach of SIPO rules, but it's still a pretty serious issue if you look back at what happened in 2008, and if you look back at the form that was submitted and Damien English's very quick decision to resign.
Yes, look, I don't think there was an issue in terms of his declaration to the Standards and Public Office Commission in relation to that form. I think the issue was in relation to his application to Meath County Council, and I think that's why Damien resigned so quickly in relation to it. But look, the rules are there, and, you know, I think it is important that people would redouble their efforts to make sure that everything that is on their declaration is clearly accurate, and that there is no way that people can make an allegation otherwise in the future.
What does it say about SIPO, Christina? You know, if the Ditch are doing this by double-checking things, surely that should be a function of that office and that organisation.
Yeah, well, the truth of the matter is SIPO have been asking for additional powers and more teeth for many, many years. They release annual reports, and continuously when I've reported on them, you look at the recommendations, and each time they've been the same consecutively for the last decade, that they need more powers. They need to have, you know, mechanisms in which they can hold people to account properly. I think there is an issue perhaps with the declarations, not in particularly this case with Damien. I think he probably would have survived had it just been, you know, an issue with declarations, because they do not have to declare certain properties like holiday homes, you know, if their spouse's name is on them, which I think a lot of people in the public are surprised about, you know, that, you know, politicians can have multiple properties that are not on their declaration. So I think if we're going to start looking at wider reforms of ethics legislation, SIPO regulations, I think the declaration form in itself should be looked at. You know, when you actually look at it, it is just something that's scanned through. It's
accepted.
Written, it's accepted.
Thank
it should,
you for I your think, answers. No
yeah,
questions
I think
asked.
It should be online, more accessible for the public, and it should be. I think everything should be laid out. Mm-hmm. You know, any interest, any property, because it'll just put all of these stories. You know, I think for political parties, particularly, I'm surprised to hear that they're not interested in doing an audit, because no doubt there is other issues or other stories that are going to emerge, and it's going to just be a continuous drip feed, I think, for politicians. And I think people want full transparency about properties people own, be it their wife, their holiday homes. Everything should be out in the open.
Why is there a resistance to that, Niall Collins? Why? Why not just do it?
Well, I think there's a balance to be had here, in fairness. You know, spouses and family members of politicians are entitled to their own level of privacy. So how far into that space should the transparency that Christina speaks to, how far should that extend? And that's something that there has to be a conversation about. Because, like, you know, I've been party to discussions within our own Fianna Fáil group where issues in relation to SIPO and in relation to what we're discussing, the types of issues that we're discussing now, where some members of my parliamentary party have said how they've had family members impacted, where they've been declined jobs by virtue of the fact that they're politically affiliated, that they have a family member who's involved in politics, that they may be politically exposed. So there's wider ramifications here. The whole banking sector has obligations now to report in relation to politically exposed persons. So this isn't simple. It's not as if politicians are running trying to hide assets. I mean, anybody can go on the land registry and search Niall Collins or search Dennis Nocton or search anybody, and up will pop what's registered on the screen.
So then just declare it. Do you know what I mean? Why is there an issue?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, there isn't an issue. But some people make errors of judgment. Some people make errors of omissions. And some people, maybe for the wrong reasons, which there should be a sanction against, don't declare what they're supposed to declare. So I'm just outlining to you, it's grand to say let's have all of this transparency and broaden it out to include politicians' families. And where does that extend to? How far does it go? For example, you, Claire, you're a public figure. RTE is funded by the public purse. Should you have to make a declaration and declare all of your interests, all of your husband's interests? You know, I mean, this is
obviously... Wouldn't be a very long declaration.
Dennis, there's a lot of us in that boat. Yeah. I have an ill declaration at the end of the year, which I've just again furnished to SIPO. Many TDs have nil declarations also. So,
right. Dennis, you want to come in there.
The presumption that all politicians are out there trying to hide assets or hide something from the public, I think that presumption is wrong.
Yeah, look, the couple of points here. First of all of our declarations are published, and you can go on to kildarestreet.com and you will see at the click of a button every single TD and senator what the assets they have declared. I think the issue here in relation to the declaration form, and the declaration form is a very old document at this stage, and I think the whole thing needs to be modernised and updated, is the exemptions. So if nothing was exempted, I think it would be much easier for clarity in relation to it. But remember, because the impression has been given here that politicians are trying to cover up something, remember that all of our bank accounts, all of our family bank accounts, our siblings, my own mother's bank account is monitored. Because she is a connected person. You know, so how far out do you go in relation to this? Like, is it right that my mother's bank account is monitored by the bank and reported on an annual basis because I happen to be a politician?
But that's no the level of there. Declaration. If there's no corruption there, then you have nothing to worry about.
No, there isn't any corruption there in relation to it. But like, how far do you extend this out? Where do you draw the line in relation to it? This is the point that Niall is making.
No, I don't think there's an assertion that politicians are trying to hide anything, but there's clearly confusion even within the political body of what's meant to be on that form.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Yeah.
As in, if one politician has been in the House for a very long time and is very affay with the form, they know what should go on it. And perhaps somebody that is a newer member is not familiar enough with it and leaves something off. This is the problem, that perhaps maybe there should just be an open book on everything. There's no exemptions. Everyone knows what needs to go on that form. And then a lot of these stories and a lot of the confusion
around it. I think that would make far more sense.
I think we also need to look at the format of the form, because like, it's you can't search it. It's literally, it's just a load of pages scanned up to the Oireachtas website. It's not digitised, and I think that has to be looked at as well. Because
I think they should be all digitised, and that we could adapt and change them on an ongoing basis. Mm. That we'd make the declaration as it happens. So if I buy a property on the 1st of February, I don't declare that until the following January. I should be able to declare that
straight away when I buy that
property.
Okay.
And they're online.
We move on now to these protests outside these centres that are providing accommodation for people who are seeking asylum or people who are seeking refuge here in this country. And I don't know if you heard Vincent Jackson earlier this morning. He's a councillor in Drimna, Ballymun. His house, he wasn't there, his family were there, and the protesters came to his house yesterday evening, and his description was that they were absolutely terrified in the house, and I don't think much sleep was had overnight. Niall Collins, what's to be done about this?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to point out that the people who are engaging in these protests are a very, very small minority of our society and Irish community. I think it's disgraceful. It's thuggery. It's criminality. It needs to be called out.
They have a right to protest.
They absolutely have a right to protest. But protesting in the intimidatory manner in which they are protesting outside the places, the reception centres and the residences of refugees and asylum seekers is just simply not acceptable in my view.
Is it happening where you are?
There's a number of reception centres across my constituency. There was some attempts online to try and stir up concern and hatred, and to be fair to the local community and to the public representatives who turned up on the night, that was put to bed. And in fairness to the operators of the reception centres and some of the people who were accommodated in the reception centres, they turned up and they spoke and they gave an absolutely brilliant account of themselves both the service providers and the residents of the reception centres. So I think we have to have, I hate to use this phrase, an absolute zero tolerance approach to this.
What does that mean, though?
Well, I think if necessary, and this is a personal view that I have, but I certainly think that if this continues the way it's continuing, I think we need to look at exclusion zones for protesters away from places where these people are living, because they come here for safe harbour and, you know, having to confront that potentially on a daily basis just simply isn't acceptable.
What do you think of that suggestion? Exclusion zones.
I think Niall is right. I think we're going to have to look at that if this goes on. There's absolutely no doubt about it. He is 100% correct. This is intimidation, and I want to condemn outright in relation to the protests that are taking place. That doesn't take from the fact that there are genuine issues there and there are genuine concerns by the communities involved that need to be addressed. And I think probably the most significant decision that was made before Christmas with the appointment of the new government was the appointment of Joe O'Brien with responsibility to engage with communities. And I think that was actually a very positive development, because Joe, coming from his background before he came into politics, and I would have worked with Joe in relation to immigrant communities down through the years, he knows and understands this issue. He is a Minister of State in the Department of Rural and Community Development, and there's an opportunity for Joe to work with these communities to look at some of the challenges. Because, you know, the frustrating thing for some of these communities is that the only government investment that has been seen in those communities in the last 5 or 6 years has been a reception centre or accommodation for asylum seekers, not addressing the housing issues, not addressing the health issues that these communities have. We're talking at the moment in terms of the health crisis we have in this country and how difficult it is to access a GP. But if you go to Ballyhadrin in County Roscommon, it's impossible because of the huge numbers of people that have come in there in the last number of years, and the services and supports have not been resourced. Now, that needs to happen. We need to look at the social and economic development of these towns. Like, isn't there something fundamentally wrong where the government can go in and lease a hotel for 12 months? Clearly there's something wrong with the economy in that town where a hotel cannot be viable. So what can we do to promote and develop economic development in that town, to deal with the social challenges that come with these issues? And I think if they're dealt with in the round and we engage with communities who have genuine concerns, I think a lot of the frustration that's there could be addressed. But that doesn't take from the protests that are going on at the moment that should not be tolerated or allowed.
Vincent Jackson earlier on, and I think I said he was Ballymoney's, Ballyfermot and Drimna, the local councillor there, he was saying that some children are not turning up to school because of there's such fear in that community. Now, if that suggestion of Niall's is acted on and exclusion zones are put in place, does that not make the situation worse, Louise?
I think it could, perhaps. But I mean, I think what this comes down to is people feeling safe where they're living, and I think that's probably the government's overriding concern. At the same time, do you want to have a situation where people feel that they're segregated and people can't go in within and protest within a certain distance of an accommodation provider or a hotel? I don't know if that's necessarily the answer. I think what the most important thing for the government to do is to make communities aware of what they're doing, because my understanding of it is in Drimna that they weren't necessarily told that far in advance that people were going to be moving in, that it was the same in Ballymun. So I think situations like this are avoidable, but it always comes back, as it always seems to come back with this government, to communication. And there just hasn't been that line of communication between the government and the communities.
When you say that, is you get the line from government that no community has a veto over who lives in that
area.
Yeah,
and I think that's fair. And I absolutely don't think that anyone can say we don't want X, Y or Z in this community. But I think if you came in and you said, right, this hotel, these people are moving in, this is what we're going to do, these are the services that we're going to put in place, this is how many people are moving in, it would get rid of that. And we've seen it, and I think Simon Harris said it on your show yesterday as well, people travelling to areas kind of stirring up fear. If people knew what was actually going on, you might actually eradicate that, and you might eradicate those fears that people have oftentimes that are misjudged.
I don't think the government's approach of the last minute information, I think the approach there, obviously they're dealing with a very fast moving situation, but the vacuum of information I think is being left there because they're fearful of groups turning up if they give too much information. But the kick side of that is that they're not giving enough, that it's actually creating that lack of information and that unknown. But I think really that's come out of all these protests is, again, as you said, the communication. I think local governments and I think local representatives in particular, picking up what Vincent said about the misinformation that is turning up on, you know, Facebook and on online sites about what locations are being used, who is in there. I think the minute that information is put out before it is allowed to be seeded within the community and for all of this to kick off, there needs to be an immediate factual information put out on that. When a local authority or a local representative hears of some untruth about some building in the community, I think there should be a concerted effort across all lines to shut that down and say, actually, no, that's not happening here. This is what is happening here, but your information is incorrect. Because I just think...
So the local authorities and local representatives need to be active on those social media groups.
But the difficulty is we don't know. We don't know. We're the, like, we get the phone call 2 or 3 days before the centre or the facility is opened up. And like, I've had these conversations with Roderick O'Gorman, and I have to say, and particularly in my own area in Roscommon, like, the people in Ballyhadreen have been more than welcoming. And in any other part of the county, we've had wave after wave of programme refugees coming in. We've had asylum seekers in the reception centres in Athlone. There isn't an issue per se with people coming in. The frustration is that you have wave after wave of people coming in and no resources coming into those communities. Like in Ballyhadreen, all of the children that will arrive whenever they arrive before Christmas, they will all be bussed out to rural schools because there is no capacity for children in the Ballyhadreen area. There's no capacity in relation to the health service there. So what I've been saying to Roderick O'Gorman and what Joe O'Brien needs to do is to work with the HSE, to work with the Department of Education, to ensure that it's not just purely about where the accommodation is, but how can we provide proper facilities for those people in terms of schooling and health as well.
To go back to what Christina was saying, and Niall, you might come in on this, that if local representatives are to counteract misinformation, they have to have the right information in order to be able to do that. And in many cases, they don't have them. They don't have that information and they don't have it in time.
That's true, but you have to remember that the government has to react very, very quickly when people present themselves to this country, and people are presenting themselves to our country in big numbers, as we know, almost in excess of 70,000 now. And when there are then issues in the reception centre at City West, when that overflows, when we had to use emergency accommodation, tented accommodation, there was huge criticism of government and a huge fallout in relation to that, which is understandable. So the point I'm making is this, that the government is dealing with a very large crisis spurned and triggered by the war in Ukraine, the mass migration of people, which is impacting on us. We're dealing with it on a day-to-day basis. When people present themselves, we have to try and accommodate them at short notice. I accept that in some parts of the country, communications can be better and should be better. The issue of that Dennis has spoken to in relation to resources is a fair point also. That spans other parts.
This crisis line is wearing a bit thin because we're a year in now and you're still using that excuse. Oh, look, we're a victim of the war in Ukraine. We've got to get our act together here.
No, it's not an excuse, Claire, and I think you're wrong to describe it like that. We've quite successfully accommodated a huge cohort of people, as I've outlined, people who, many of whom, by the way, who are working in our economies, in the different sectors of our economy, are contributing positively and proactively to the communities that they're now living in. And I think a lot of the service providers, and this is my experience of the service providers in Limerick and in the counties around Limerick that I've interacted with, they are fully engaged with Roderick O'Gorman's department in terms of forward planning. They have sites identified that they can further develop if and when the demand increases. Okay. So all of that is going on. Look, I accept.
Yeah, the problem with that is
there are issues with it,
and there are challenges with it, and I fully accept that. And look, we have large numbers of people coming in a very short period of time, and the government is trying to manage that and forward plan. The difficulty with this is you're only looking at this from an accommodation perspective. You're not dealing with the other issues that are there in those communities in the first place before anyone comes in, and the strains and pressures that is putting on the social infrastructure that's there. And until we actually bring in a wraparound service that deals with those challenges in a comprehensive way, you're going to have this frustration being expressed across the communities.
We heard the Taoiseach say on Wednesday night after Cabinet that, you know, we are expecting thousands of more Ukrainian refugees over the next couple of months. Roger Cormann said to me in an interview before Christmas that accommodation is going to continue to be a challenge into 2023. The government is going to have to sit down. You're, like you say, Claire, we're a year into the war. They're going to have to sit down and try and put some kind of wraparound service together, because I think it was accepted that at first that it was an emergency and we're just putting people wherever we could put houses, hotels, modular homes, whatever. But it's getting to the stage now where we've seen the pressure on the health service, we've seen the pressure on schools that already existed. If we're a year into this now, we don't know how long it's going to last. Something's going to have to be done.
What's the deal now with the housing situation and Roderick O'Gorman putting forward these plans now with the one-off housing for people from Ukraine? Then Leo Varadkar, since he took over as Taoiseach, seems to be grabbing with both hands the housing problem. What does it say about your own minister?
Well, I just want to say in relation, the word wraparound services has been used in relation to accommodating refugees, particularly Ukrainians. Our schools have been very well resourced in terms of dealing with the extra demands placed on them. There are issues, of course, across rural Ireland in particular in relation to GP services in particular. And over the last number of years, we've tripled the number of GPs who are now in training, and we're ramping up the number of medicine places. But in terms of housing, I think it's very, very important, and I want to really emphasise this point to our listeners. The Housing for All delivery programme for our social, affordable, cost rental housing is running completely in parallel to the response to the Ukrainian crisis. The Ukrainian and the immigration challenges that we're experiencing.
But specifically, are you concerned that Leo Varadkar and Roderick O'Gorman are trying to wrestle away housing from Fianna Fáil and from Dara O'Brien?
Absolutely not. Dara O'Brien is leading out on the housing department. Look, we've had a changeover in Taoiseach, as we all know, and Leo Varadkar is perfectly entitled to, when he takes over as Taoiseach, to get himself into the depth and into the detail of all the briefs of all the cabinet ministers who serve under him. I do not have an issue with that. I don't think Dara O'Brien
or anybody has
an issue with it. He's similarly done the same with the Department of Justice. He's done the same with other departments. And that's fine. The Taoiseach of today has to assert his authority and his interest and his level of knowledge and detail into every cabinet minister underneath him.
The fact of the matter is that housing and Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil know it is going to be the make or break for the next general election. And it's been no secret that Leo Varadkar, even in the run up to Christmas, has been speaking to many reporters saying that a new fresh look on housing was needed.
But so that will help Dara O'Brien in moving his agenda along. As minister, having the Taoiseach involved in your department is a positive.
I do know. Let's leave it there. Thank you all very much, Niall Collins, Dennis Nocton, Louise Byrne and Christina Finn. Now, that's it from us for the week. Many thanks to all of our team here on the programme. Let's go over to Louise Duffy.